Let's do this. Hello and welcome to back.
To the Two Hosers Photo Show?
Should we try that again? That was terrible.
You paused. Like, there was an unnaturally long pause there.
Yeah, it was for effect.
Oh, sorry.
I'm leaving this in. This is gold now.
I stepped on your toes. I apologize.
Let's try that again. Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to say anything back this
to
time.
There it is. Jesus.
Try it again.
I admit I baited you on that one. Hello, yeah. And welcome back, Cotter, to the Two Hosers Photo Show. This is terrible cheesy opening. I'm Alan from Germany.
And I'm Adam from Vancouver, Canada.
And we are the Two Hosers. It says so on the birth certificate.
And on the website.
More importantly, the website. Actually, only one of those things, and it's the website. So what's going on? What's going on with you?
Not much. No, just chilling.
All right. As am I. Weather's getting better. It's 7 in the morning over here in lovely Germany, and finally not minus something.
Forecast here is rain, and more rain. All week rain.
In Vancouver?
Yeah.
Wow. This just in. Chocolate tastes good, and it's going to rain in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're looking at some sunny weather. I heard 14 today, so I'm very excited. Yay.
Great. Go enjoy it. Go to the beach.
Yeah, that's going to be a 14-hour drive, so probably not.
Okay.
So what did you shoot? Did you shoot anything? We're getting right into it.
I shot, actually, because of the photo challenge, I went out on 2 days on the weekend, one day at sunset and one day at sunrise, and tried to take a bunch of pictures. I live near the water in British Columbia, so I tried to take some pictures near the water just because I thought it would be some interesting photo material. So I took some pictures down near the little old Steveston village where there's lots of boats, and did it 2 days, one day sunset, one day sunrise. So that was nice. I didn't actually take any pictures of the kids until today, and it was all different subject matter for me.
That's good to hear, man.
Yeah,
I shot in Germany. Well, in most of the world, they have the now we're in Lent, aren't we?
I don't know.
Oh, come on.
Are you?
Ask your. You are. No. Everybody is.
Yeah. No,
ask your wife if she ate chocolate today.
Are you in Lent right now?
Lent started today.
Yes, she is in Lent. But
what did she give up?
Did you give up anything?
No, I don't.
No, she gave up nothing.
Okay, wow, good for her. Everyone I know always gives up chocolate because it's like, all right, I'll try to drop a few before the bathing suit season comes.
Right.
But your wife does not need that, so good for her.
Yeah, she's not observing Lent this year.
Okay, well, anyways, in the lead up to Lent, you have your Mardi Gras, your carnival, your fashing, which, little tidbit for the kids, is all the same thing, essentially, I think. If there's any differences, I don't know what they are, but that's the point, is here are the about 2 weeks leading up to Lent is a big celebration for Mardi Gras or Fat Tuesday, which was yesterday. And what they do here, a little bit different. It's not quite the New Orleans Mardi Gras, unfortunately. I don't even know what that means, but what they do is they have parades here where everybody sort of dresses up, and these guys get into it. They dress up as, like, with wooden masks as witches and goblins and stuff, and they go around to different towns and every day have a different parade, a huge, long parade. They walk through the street and throw confetti and have smoke.
Yeah.
And throw candy to the kids, which is fun for the kids. And everybody dresses up in the crowd as well. It's like Halloween. So
sounds awesome. I went and shot.
It actually is. It's pretty fun. To be perfectly honest, it gets a little bit long because the There's not a ton of variety in the costumes, although they are intricate.
Dressed up as Batman?
In the crowd, maybe, but I did not see everybody. Hmm. No, everybody in the parade is dressed up as a horribly ugly witch or goblin or something. Something very scary is the theme. And then part of it is the guys, when they walk down the parade route, they'll see, that they basically grab the young women and carry them off with them. So you see guys grabbing, 15-year-old girls and carrying them down the parade route, where they zip tie their legs and make them hop back to their spot on the parade route.
Sounds like a lawsuit.
Not in Germany. Not litigious. Not litigious. Anyway, long story still long. I shot a bunch of pictures of that because it was a friend of ours' birthday. And so for her birthday, everybody went to the parade in one of the neighboring towns. And they brought their kids and that. So I took my 70 to 200 mil lens on my 5D and took a bunch of pictures of the parade and the people who were attending the parade, like our friends.
Yeah.
So there was that.
Cool.
So it wasn't the easiest thing to shoot because of the sun. Of course, the parade took place at, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which is still not ideal in terms of a sunny day.
Yeah.
A lot of hard shadows, a lot of mixed light, because in the wintertime, and this ties back into white balance, is the shadows, I don't know if you've noticed this, direct sunlight is still pretty nice and yellow, yeah. But the shadows are a lot bluer than in the summer.
Not something that I probably paid conscious attention to.
Okay. So that's a challenge, getting the color right on, but also people in a parade who are moving and walking in and out of direct sunlight.
You know, how did you cope with that? What was the answer for that situation?
Well, some of it I ended up shooting manual. I had to shoot manual exposure because in order to get an accurate reading, there were so many different zones of light.
Yeah.
In some of the frames that it was really a random setting. So I had to basically dial in what I liked and hope for the best. And other times, the first thing I did is look for a spot on the route where I would get sort of even results. And that was look for somewhere in that there's a large area of shade being right. cast across the street.
Right.
And essentially wait for my subject to walk into that zone. So, I also shot a lot of close-up stuff with my zoom lens so that I didn't worry about too much about the background blowing out, because when people are walking in shade and getting a nice even exposure, you'll find out you're not going to get any of the sky to be exposed properly.
Right.
Or bright sunlight in behind, so I ended up staying in tight.
Okay.
And when in doubt, when you have a really tough exposure, lights and darks and all that, what do you expose for? Any clue?
I'd probably say if you're shooting people, the face, or whatever the subject of your photograph is.
Expose for the face. Ideally, you'll get a nice balanced situation, but in real life, that doesn't always happen, as you know. So you make the best you can. Sometimes you play the hand you're dealt, and you have to just expose for the face. And that means, the background might blow out, or other stuff might be too dark.
Yeah.
But if your face is exposed, you have the important part done properly, and you take what you can get.
Yeah.
So that's that.
Yeah. I guess we'll get to this when we talk about the photo challenge, but when I was shooting, pictures of the sun, and sunsets, is that, never having really spent any time doing that before, holy smokes, does it change, you know, second to second, not minute to minute, but clouds come in, come out, all of a sudden it's bright, then it's dark, and you're constantly shuffling. And I found that AV mode was almost useless in that situation. So I was constantly just playing with the manual settings, because I thought it just, there's no way that, because there's too many things changing, that I could just stick with AV mode. So I found definitely manual mode much easier to play with and to get, you know, something half decent in the way of an exposure. But I'd never done that before, so I didn't even really know where to start as far as where to set with that much bright light coming directly at you. So it was definitely a sort of a chimping experience where I was constantly looking at the LCD and sort of seeing what I was getting.
Well, that's the beautiful thing, is being able to make adjustments immediately.
You know what's also awesome is that every time now that I spend time looking at my screen, I envision myself as an actual monkey with a banana.
Well, chimpanzee.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think you got the reference.
Well, that brings us to the photo challenge. You brought us right in there. Let's talk about last week's photo challenge.
Okay.
What was the challenge last week? Remind everybody, including myself.
Something to do with the sun. So the sun was in some way supposed to be involved in the photograph.
The sun.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was your challenge to me. So hopefully you were able to come up with something there. Actually, I have your picture in front of me now.
I'm just looking for mine right now. You think I'd be more prepared, but...
Well, you had 2 days because, you know, you slept through it the other day, so...
Oh, yeah, I didn't label yours. There it is. I got yours now.
Mine's labeled awesome picture.
Awesome picture. It came out of the camera like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I am looking at yours. So, yeah, the challenge, as I'm just, you know, bebopping around here, challenge was, like Adam said, the sun. And now did you, you shot a lot of pictures.
I shot lots, yeah.
Like a lot of different options. I don't mean you just went out there and shot a bunch of pictures of the same thing. You ran with it.
Yeah. Well, I went out at sunset and one day I went out at sunrise. So on the day I went out at sunrise, I took pictures of the street. I took pictures of boats. I took pictures into the sun. I took pictures with my back to the sun. Mostly boats and water, and there, you know, that's just because that's where I was. And then again, I did some of the same types of pictures on the sunset day. And the picture that I've used here is one that I took on the sunset day, where the sun is just leaking through the clouds and there isn't a whole lot of light. And so I did manage to get something that I considered halfway decent. And there was a bunch of other pictures. I just kind of went with this one, and for no real particular reason other than I like the boats.
I love it. And also for people listening, the fish and chips there on the right-hand side, the fish and chip place is pretty good.
Yeah, Pajos.
Pajos Fish and Chips. Unsponsored reference.
Yep.
I love this shot. I love this shot. You could have picked any of the ones. I like the other ones you took as well, some of which I think are available on your wife's blog.
Yep. She posted a bunch.
She ran with it. So, yeah, I like the feeling this sets, or this sort of tells us about. This is sunset, correct?
Yep.
I knew that because I can see where the sun is setting. I know where this picture is taken, so down in Steveson there.
Yep.
So...
And I tried to you know, apply some of the composition techniques that we were talking about last week. I tried to sort of, you know, use the rule of thirds, just again as an example. So in terms of where I position the horizon and the boats, I did try to, again, you know, a lot easier when these objects are staying still. I did try to shoot it that way. I don't believe this picture's cropped, although it might have been a tiny bit, just to get one of the boats out so that it sort of started and stopped at a natural point. But other than that, I don't think it was really adjusted much.
Love it. And you shot this, I'm going to guess what time. I'm going to say it's about 10 to 6.
Yeah, right. Yeah, probably right around that, within a couple of minutes anyways, just before 6.
I'm going to look at the...
Sun's...
Oh, sorry. Yeah, the EXIF data says quarter to 6.
There you go. Off. Yeah.
And this was on manual exposure?
Yes, this was on manual exposure.
Now, getting back to what you talked about with manual exposure, why manual? What was happening on AV mode?
I think again it was either, and again I can't remember exactly, but it was either too dark in the foreground or it was too bright in the foreground. So I can't remember which way it was, but as I was going up and down the dial, I just tried a few shots, and each time I think there wasn't quite enough light for how far I was standing from the boats. So right. I had to make a manual adjustment in order to light up the foreground.
I see. So it, basically the meter was taking a reading off the sun.
Yeah, I believe that's what was happening, yeah.
And therefore it tricks itself into taking a photo that's too dark.
Right.
That can happen.
And I just wanted a balance, right? I wanted a balance. I wanted to everybody to see not just dark ships and the bright sunset. I wanted to actually see what we were shooting in the foreground. I wanted to see the boats very clearly with the sunset.
Nice. And looking at the EXIF data, it says you shot it at F8.
Yeah.
Because?
F8, applying the National Geographic rule of... F8 and be there.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. You know, like a lot is in focus here.
Yeah.
And last thing, where is your focus point? Do you know, roughly?
It's pretty centered. I think it's on the second boat from the left.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Good work. I'm not surprised, yet I am impressed. How does that sound?
That sounds good.
Yeah.
What about yours? Why don't you take us through your picture?
I just got a picture from a couple of years ago that I snapped with my iPhone. And
it's actually, it came with the phone. It's one of the wallpapers.
It's an Apple one. It's just, I couldn't be bothered. No, this is the big challenge for me. And it's funny you took a picture down the water because that's always my association with sunset. I think growing up on the West Coast, that's where the sun sets, over the water.
Yeah.
And so it's always a very big association, be it down at Kitts Beach or down in Steveston or something like that. I don't have that luxury here, living in the middle of Europe. So I had to sort of think outside my comfort zone and really think about what's going to make a sunset. And also we kind of have some sort of little rolling hills around us towards the west, and that's going to change things. We're not going to get the true sunset time. It's going to set a little bit early, and so I decided that I was going to go and shoot down at the main train station.
Yeah.
So that's what the shot you're looking at now is from a bridge overlooking the Hauptbahnhof in Tübingen. And ultimately, I decided to go for a little different feeling. Rather than shoot the actual sun setting, which is what's happening just behind there, I decided to kind of shoot that feeling of sunset in the wintertime when the sun drops and everything sort of has that blue feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know that in the late in the winter when the sun's going down and all of a sudden all the tones just take a real coolness to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so added to that is the tracks. Now that the sun setting behind is reflecting on the train tracks, giving it that, wow, what color would you say that would be?
I don't know, orange?
Whew. I'm actually not sure, but I was hoping it was going to come out orange.
Yeah, it looks orange.
Because the feeling I get, you know, when oftentimes in the wintertime when you're coming home and it's kind of this blue, cold and blue out, and you see your house, and you have these nice warm orange lights on the inside, and there's this sort of blue versus orange feeling that you see show up in it's a theme that shows up in a lot of movies and basically a lot of people can associate with it. And so that's what I was going for. That was the feeling I wanted to go for.
Yeah. Well, you didn't get it, so better luck next time. Yeah. What was it shot at? What were the parameters there?
Well, I used my 70 to 200 mil lens. I forget exactly what focal length I was on, somewhere in the middle. I shot manual again, just like yourself, because the AV exposure was all over the map, depending what I decided to meter off of.
Right.
Either too bright or too dark. So I found something I liked in the middle.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember. I didn't have the luxury of shooting at f/8. I'm pretty sure this is actually at f/4 because the light was dropping very fast, as you well know.
Yeah.
And so there's that. And I ended up cropping it square because that's kind of how I envisioned it in my head. Before I shot, I decided I was going to shoot it as a square photo.
I like it.
So that's this week's photo challenge. So,
and where's your focus target there?
I focused this one on the train facing us on the right-hand side. There's two trains together. The one towards the middle of the picture.
Okay.
That's the one that I focused on.
Great.
So, had I been on f/8, I probably would have focused somewhere in the middle to maximize focus. But sometimes you don't get that opportunity, and so focus was there.
Okay.
Okay, well, this leads us into finishing off our discussion last week of creating depth. Is part of, what did we talk about last week with creating depth? Did we talk about that?
I don't recall specifically talking about depth, really. Maybe we did.
Didn't I call the episode depth?
No, I don't think so. Did you? I thought it was rule of thirds.
Oh, yeah, rule of thirds. Oh, it was composition. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Wow, avid listeners to our own show.
I think you hinted at depth, but I don't think we really talked about techniques to establish depth.
Right. Well, let's talk about depth as part of our composition.
Okay.
When we're looking to compose a photograph, oftentimes we do it accidentally, but if we can be aware of it, everybody wins. So one of the real challenges, like when we're taking photographs, photographs are two-dimensional images. They have width and they have height.
Right. I think we did, now that I'm thinking back, I think we did briefly talk about it just in terms of, I think I mentioned the example that you had on your blog about standing up against a wall versus at a 45 degree. So there was a little suggestion. Sorry to take you off topic, but there was a little suggestion.
Okay, I'll try to get this train rolling again. No, so for when we're shooting pictures, some say handicapped, not handicapped, but we're limited by the width of the picture and the height of the picture. And there is no depth. It's a flat piece of paper.
Right.
Except for it's our job as a photographer to create the illusion of depth, to make the viewer of the picture get the impression that it goes into the wall or into the book or wherever, however you're showing, into the computer screen likely. So how do we, what are some visual clues in life that convey depth to us? Any ideas offhand?
Well, as things get further away, they get smaller. So if you have...
What about in regards to a train tracks?
As they get further away, they get closer together?
Converging lines.
Yeah.
It's like how we call it down at the science lab.
I said it the dumb way.
Well, I like to say dumb, but to be fair to Adam, again, on the notes, the show notes, we do have size of objects listed first. But in an effort to sort of improv and roll with it,
I'm not looking at the show notes, so if that justifies my answers. I just like to basically improv this.
Okay. Well, you're doing a reverse improv. That's what I'm saying. Anyways, converging lines. Converging lines are a great way, or a really simple way that our mind automatically recognizes depth in real life. if you're standing out on a road and you look off down in the distance, the road does appear to converge. It does appear to come together on either side, like the two sidewalks essentially appear to come to a point. Right. Now, being a rational human being, you know that that doesn't actually happen. Those lines don't actually come together. So your mind automatically assumes that that is off in the distance. And this all happens very, very fast. It's not like as if you think about it. It's just that through your everyday life, you learn these things, and your mind automatically makes that jump. And so that's kind of what's working in the train photo. We can see the train tracks getting closer together as they go off in the distance. So that's one way.
Okay.
The other way that Adam was right about is what we call relative size. Actually, I don't know if we call that. I call it relative size. Let's say you're standing on that same street and you see a series of telephone poles or streetlights. Let's say streetlights. And the one in front of you is very, very large. And the one very far away is very, very small. Now, your mind knows that those streetlights all came from the same streetlight factory and were built all the same size. So as soon as one appears smaller, your brain knows that it's actually very far away.
Correct.
Whew. So those are two visual clues in everyday life that allow us to judge depth. Now, if we can focus on that, not necessarily focus, if we can, what's another word that doesn't confuse people with photography?
I don't know either.
Okay, we'll just say focus. When we say focus, we don't mean focusing your camera. We mean focusing your mind.
Correct.
So if we can focus on including some of those visual clues into our photograph, we will now have depth in a two-dimensional image.
Great tricks.
Your fishing boat doesn't really use converging lines, as far as I can tell. It doesn't really make use of relative size. It does a little bit. We can see the masts off in the background are smaller than the ones in the foreground.
Yeah.
But it is a little bit confusing as to which is which. But we still get the impression of depth. Because you have a foreground, a middle ground, and a background, and the background is off in the distance. So yours is actually a lot more complicated than a simple visual cue.
Well, the challenge wasn't create depth.
No, it wasn't. but, smart guy, most of your pictures, you should be thinking about creating depth.
Well, I hadn't listened to this episode yet.
You probably have been thinking about adding depth to your pictures without knowing it. But now that you're aware of it, potentially you can work it in and get to the point where you start adding it in without recognizing it. Like, you don't want to go out and think to yourself, okay, how can I add depth to this picture of my daughter playing the bassoon in whatever class they do, music class.
I don't even know what a bassoon is.
Well, you're going to end up buying one.
Is it like a recorder?
So, I'm not 100% sure. So you won't be thinking, you don't want to be out there thinking, hey, how can I add depth to this? But by that point, in a few years when your daughter is in the bassoon class, you want to be so adept at adding depth that it just becomes second nature.
All right.
Okay. That's what's going to end up happening.
Okay.
So that's creating depth. We'll throw some examples up. I have a blog post about it from a while back. You can see this week's challenge photos are a good sample of how to create depth in an image.
Not mine, apparently.
Adams is a good example, but not a simple example.
Okay.
So that's difficult for us. We're down the road on that one. So you did good by accident. Congratulations. You're the greatest. So our main topic, that was just the teaser topic. Our main topic, that wasn't really our teaser topic. That was a main topic as well. We're going to start in with the question I get from everybody. Now, the technical term is, how do I make the background? How do I make the background blurry?
I thought when you said the question you get from everybody, you were going to talk about, why do you cut your hair like that?
Really? Hair? Hair comments? It's like you're making fun of me, making fun of my car while you're riding the bus.
Yeah, no, I apologize.
Well, let's move on.
Okay.
So depth of field. This is the question that everybody always asks. How do I do depth of field? So they don't ask like that.
So what's your simple answer? Your tweet.
My simple answer is, if it was simple, this wouldn't have happened on episode 9.
That's true.
It would have been episode 1, and we'd have been done. One and done. There are simple, okay? There are factors. First of all, what is depth? What are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the blurry background, I think, is what most people think when they see an example of depth of field. So an image which only has a very shallow field of what's in focus. So I think you used an example right back in one of our first episodes where, you know, the eye is in focus and the person's head is just turned slightly off and the other eye isn't in focus. So the eye closest to the camera, you focus on, you get in focus, but if you're shooting with a really big aperture, then the other eye or the nose is totally out of focus. So you have a very, very shallow depth of what is actually in focus.
Correct. One of the things to keep in mind, we are not talking about depth of focus. Unfortunately, this can be very confusing. Depth of field and depth of focus are not the same thing-ish. They sort of are, but depth of focus comes into a much more advanced sort of situation, and I don't even want to talk about it right now. But please do not call depth of field depth of focus for your own sake.
Okay.
For your own sake. Don't confuse it. Yeah, depth of field, most people when they're shooting with their point and shoot or their phones or their iPods or whatever it is they're shooting with, find that everything is in focus. Whether it's the foreground, background, middle ground, everything is in focus. And so the first thing people want to do when they get to a digital SLR is go the other way and have the blurry background because it looks professional.
Right.
It looks, you see pictures in magazines, you watch movies. The big difference there, their depth of field is just fantastic looking. And part of what it does is it creates depth to images. Yeah. A lack of depth of field can create depth. It can bring the focus onto our subject.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it looks cool.
That's why I like it.
So that's our definition of depth of field. It's basically what is in focus. What looks cool. That's what we're going to call this episode. What looks cool? So, those are the terms. That's the term, depth of field, what looks cool, not depth of focus. Write that down. Write that in felt pen on your hand.
Okay, now what simple answer is like in my experience, when I first got my digital SLR and I had the kit lens with it and I could only go to an aperture of 3.5, I set it and I took some pictures and I found that, I couldn't really blur the background that much. And so I went out and I got a lens that had a much bigger aperture, right? And I set it to 1.8 because it went that low. And bingo, I took pictures at 1.8 and all of a sudden, you know, on AV mode at an aperture of 1.8, I could blur the background out really, really nicely.
And the best part is you never, ever stopped doing it.
Well, pretty much.
Your lens never got past f2 after that.
Yeah, for at least a month.
Me too.
Anyways, yeah,
month. Come on, that's me, man. I do this. I still do it. I have. Well, it was one more term I want to introduce, so you can sort of forget about. But you're going to hear it. It's called bokeh.
Yep.
You've ever heard it?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Good, because I can't explain it. So go ahead and explain it for us.
The explanation is I'm not sure how you describe it, but the sort of pixel, sort of circular shapes that the blurriness is composed of can have
that's part of it.
Can have sort of a more circular, rounded shape on a better lens and kind of a more, I don't know, hexagonal shape on a crappier lens. So when you really, really kind of, I guess, zoom in on the background of the blurriness, is the shape can be different. So on a good lens, you'll get nice sort of rounded lines, and on a crappy lens, you'll get more sharper edged hexagonal lines. I don't know. That's the way I understand it.
That is the, what Adam's describing is the quality of the bokeh.
Okay.
So you're almost right on. That's a little down the road, but bokeh generally refers to the out of focus background.
Okay.
Depth of field refers to the concept of making the background out of focus or what's in focus, and bokeh is kind of talks about, refers to the blurry background. And really, those terms are used interchangeably. In fact, they might be called bokeh. I've heard some people call it bokeh. Same people who say ISO, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I don't care. I don't care what it's called, if it's bokeh or bokeh or whatever. I think is a Japanese term or a fake Japanese term. I don't really know. Doesn't affect my life that much. So that's what bokeh is. So that ties in. You might hear people talk about that.
Good or bad bokeh.
Good or bad bokeh. And I will talk later on about another episode about my bokeh addiction, which is very common. So what are some factors? Factors of depth of field. When people say to you, Adam, how do I make the background blurry?
Didn't I just say that? Set it to f1.8 and, you know.
Done?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you stand closer to the subject and you've got a greater distance between your subject and the background, then it gets blurrier. So if I have Jack stand in my house next to a wall that's 3 feet behind him and take a picture at 1.8, I'm going to get a little bit of blurriness in the background. But if I have him stand outside where there's nothing behind him for 3 miles, then the background's going to get super duper blurry.
Right. So you're dancing around all of it here. Let's try to pick these off in order.
Okay. The distance you stand for your subject, so the closer you stand to the subject.
First one I have on the show notes, which Adam does not have, yeah. We've already established. There they are. Actual
can you,
show notes.
Can you mail them to me?
Yes, I will send them over to you. I believe I did send them via electronic email.
Yeah. I prefer the other kind.
That's true. I'll send you a postcard of what we're going to talk about. First factor, there are three of them that help us define the depth of field. First factor Adam's going to explain is the focal length.
I just use a 50 millimeter lens.
Great. How does focal length matter? Let's say you have a zoom lens.
Yeah.
How does focal length play a part in depth of field?
The zoomed inness, the more zoomed in you are, the greater background blurriness you will achieve.
Wide angle lens, everything is in focus. Telephoto lens, nothing is in focus. And by nothing, I mean very little, because your subject will still be in focus, I hope.
Right.
So Adam's right. The more zoomed in you are, the more shallow our depth of field. That's factor number one.
Okay.
Now, that's something that people can do with their point-and-shoot cameras. You're not going to get the same effect as a expensive digital SLR. That's why they call it a digital SLR. No, it's not. But you can still get that effect. If you zoom in, you will find that you can still get a shallower depth of field. Factor number two, distance. How does distance? Now, Adam did talk about it. Let's boil it down to its essential z. How does distance factor in to depth of field?
So the distance between your foreground and background will affect the blurriness. So the greater the distance between the subject of your photo and what's behind them will mean greater blurriness.
Correct. What about the distance between the camera and the subject?
Again, the closer you are to the subject, the greater the background blurriness will be.
Correct.
Which there is kind of, which is, involved. Isn't that the same thing though as the zooming in? Like,
can be. The zooming in. No. Yes and no. It's. I don't want to talk in absolutes, but generally, if you try an example, maybe you could try an example. If you at some point this week get an opportunity to get your daughter to participate and actually help you, versus running around chasing bubbles, which is probably going to happen.
Yeah.
If you go and position yourself, let's say, do you want to work in feet or meters?
Feet.
Good Canadian. Okay. Go stand against a wall. Not against a wall. Sorry, opposite a wall. About 30 feet away.
Yeah.
Take a picture of your subject when your subject is 4 feet in front of you.
Yeah.
Don't move. And hopefully the wall won't move. Have your subject go and stand 26 feet away from you.
Yeah.
In other words, 4 feet from the wall.
I'm just saying yeah now. You know that, right? I'm not going to do any of this. Okay. Keep going.
And take the same picture. So you have two pictures. One where the subject is 4 feet from you.
Yeah.
One where the subject is 4 feet from the wall. And look at the difference in the two pictures. So that's a good way. It basically is a good way to see everything that Adam is talking about. In terms of distance, the closer the subject is to the camera, the more blurry depth of field you're going to get. And the further distance there is between the subject and the background, the depth of field will be much shallower as well.
Okay.
All right.
I said all that, but yeah.
He did say that, sort of not in order, though.
That's very true.
The last factor is?
I don't know.
Aperture.
Oh, okay. I said that right off the hop. That was the first thing I said.
He did say that.
Yeah.
He did say that. I wanted to end with that. Again.
Sound of show notes.
Yes. I thought I was painting a visual picture there.
Yeah.
F-stop or aperture fact is a major factor. The wider the aperture, the shallower the depth of... They could have worded that better. The shallower the depth of field.
Yeah.
The smaller the aperture, like F16, the more you get more in focus.
Right.
So those three things factor in. So you want a really blurry picture, a really out-of-focus background. You're going to shoot at f1.8 on a 200-millimeter lens and the subject 6 inches from your camera. Now, none of that's really going to be possible in those parameters,
but
you get the idea.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of episode 9. Where can people find you, Adam?
They can find my pictures on my wife's blog, schwartzchronicles.com. And where can they find you, Al?
They can find us, as always, at twohosers.com, at twohosers on the Twitter. They can find my own stuff at alnatridge.com or alnatridge.de.
And we still need a photo challenge for this week, right?
Photo challenge for this week, correct. Hopefully, the photo challenge will be go shoot a German parade.
You're done.
One step ahead of you. What's the photo challenge this week?
The photo challenge would be, do you have mountains in Germany?
Have you ever heard of the Alps?
I was just kidding. My photo challenge this week would be to take a picture involving mountains.
Involving mountains. Okay. In what way? Yeah, is there anything?
Use your imagination. Use your imagination. Just in some way, use the mountains.
Okay. We do have mountains here. not like we do in Vancouver. So this is a bit. I'm calling. Adam's trying to handicap me.
I think he can. That's. I think he can come up with something.
Self-portrait of a bald guy. Oh, looks like I win again.
No, you can't. You can't do the mountains. You could. You
I'm
know
doing
what?
Absolutely.
You could take a picture of a postcard, and then you could have mountains.
I'm not doing that, Adam. I'm going to step up. I came to play.
Okay.
Okay. I got to think things through about how I'm going to take a picture of a mountain. But I can do that. I'm going to do something good. I'm going to do better than you. That's for sure.
Okay.
I might even do it with my kit lens just to prove I'm a jerk.
You know what we should do is we should, I don't know if it's possible because I'm not as web savvy as you are, but should put a little voting box on beside the challenge of the week where our pictures are posted to have, you know, listeners vote on whose picture sucks.
Eventually, it's just going to be tied 1-1. Unless your wife votes for yours, and then it'll be 2-1.
I can get my kids to vote, too.
Yeah, you're good. You're sorted.
I'm going to have like 5 votes.
That's the end of episode 9. I'm off to somewhere in Germany on vacation. I don't know where I'm going.
Enjoy.
So the show, you're listening to the show right now. It's not going to be up on time. It's going to be up sometime on Saturday.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yeah. I think in our case, absence makes people forget who we are. So until next week, this is Alan for Adam telling you to go make better pictures.